Bag. You deceived us cruelly. I'll tell you, cruelly. How could you do it?
Mrs. Bagnet, I've just received this letter.
What letter?
It's from him, old Smallweed. Allow me to remind you that the bill at 2 months' date drawn on yourself by Mr. Matthew Bagnet and by you accepted for the sum of £97.04.09 will become due tomorrow.
Oh, George.
When you will please be prepared to take up the same on presentation.
Oh.
Don't think I've kept anything from you. I haven't had it more than a quarter of an hour. I don't understand it. He's always let it run on before, providing I paid the interest.
Oh, girl, give him a bit of my mind.
Oh, why didn't he marry Joe Pouch's widow in North America? Then he wouldn't have got himself into these troubles.
What shall I do? You see here all I possess. It's not mine, it's yours. Give me the word and I'll sell off every morsel.
Oh, girl, give him another piece of my mind.
George, on consideration, you're only at fault in taking this on without the means. Oh, but what's done can't be undone. You're an honourable fellow, I know, but it's natural in us to be a little anxious.
There's nothing I wouldn't do to discharge this obligation. But I can't. The gallery hasn't done what I hoped it would. I'm not very ashamed.
George, hear me out. Go on, old girl.
You and Matt must go and see this small wee George. You must go and see him and find out what can be done. And George, I trust Matt to you, and I'm sure you'll bring him through.
Oh, why, my dear friend, how do you do, how do you do? And who is our friend, my dear friend?
This is Matthew Bagnet, who obliged me in this matter of ours.
Ah, I hope you're well, Mr. Bagnet.
Yes, thank you, sir.
A fine man, Mr. George. Judy, bring the pipe.
I don't know that the young woman will need to give herself that trouble.
No.
It appears to me that your friend in the city's been playing tricks.
Oh, dear, no. He never does that.
Don't he? I'm glad to hear it. I thought this letter might be his doing.
Ah.
What does it mean?
Here you are, Grandfather.
Ah, Judy, my dear, the pipe. Thank you.
Ah, come, Mr. Smallweed. You know that a good lot of money's passed between us, and there's always been an understanding. I'm prepared to do the usual thing to keep this matter going. I never got a letter like this before. And here's my friend Matthew Bagnet, who you know had none of the money.
I don't know, do I?
Oh, confound you! I tell you so.
Oh, yes, you tell me so, but I don't know it.
I know it!
That's another thing. But it don't matter. It don't affect Mr. Bagnet's situation. That's the same whether or no.
Exactly! Now, I know I can't ask you to let my friend Bagnet off entirely.
Oh, my dear friend, you're too modest. You can ask me anything, Mr. George.
And you can refuse, you mean? Or rather, your friend in the city can. Come on. I'm glad to find we can be pleasant. But I want to arrange this pleasantly. We'll settle it on the spot in the usual way, won't we? And it'll ease my friend's mind if you'll tell him what our understanding is.
Exactly.
I think you asked me what the letter meant.
Why, yes, I did.
Give me the pipe, Judy. Now. That's what it means, my dear friend. I'll smash you as I smash that pipe. I'll crumble you. I'll powder you. Go to the devil.
What?
Go to the devil. Or go to my lawyer, Mr. Tulkinghorn, and show your independence now. You know where to find him.
Well, good day, Mrs. Ransford. I trust you'll continue well.
Thank you, Mr. Tulkinghorn. And you too, sir.
I'll show you downstairs, Mrs. Ransford.
Thank you. Oh, one moment. These gentlemen waiting here, I beg their pardon, but I think they must be military.
Yes, ma'am. Formally.
You'll excuse an old woman, but I had a son once who went for a soldier. A fine, handsome youth he was, and good in his bold way. though some people disparaged him to his poor mother.
Really?
I ask your pardon for troubling you, sir. God bless you, gentlemen.
Same to you, ma'am.
Why, George, don't be so cast down. Cheer up, me hearty. Standing face to the wall like that, it wasn't polite to the old lady. And a fine old lady she was, too.
You may come in now, if you wish.
Thank you, sir.
Now, what do you want?
Sergeant, I told you that I don't desire your company here.
I've had this letter, sir. I've been to Mr. Smallweed about it, and he sent me here.
Well, I've nothing to say to you. If you get into debt, you must pay your debts or take the consequences. You have no occasion to come here to learn that.
I'm sorry, sir, but I'm not prepared with the money.
Very well. Then this other man must pay it for you.
I'm sorry, but he isn't prepared with the money either.
Exactly.
Very well. Then you must pay it between you, or you must both be sued for it and both suffer. You are not to pocket other people's pounds, shillings and pence and escape scot-free.
Sir, I hope you'll have the goodness to...
I have nothing to say to you.
I must make an apology to you, sir, for pressing this, but would you let me say a private word?
Very well. Mr. Bagnet. Now, I have no time to waste.
Sir, this man with me is the other party implicated, nominally, only nominally, and I don't want him to get into trouble on my account. He's a most respectable man with a wife and family, formerly in the Royal Artillery.
I don't care a pinch of snuff for the Royal Artillery.
No, sir, but I care a good deal for Bagnet and his family. If I could bring them through this matter, I should have no help for it but to give up, without other consideration, what you wanted the other day.
Have you got it here?
I have it here, sir.
Sergeant, make up your mind now, for this is final. You can leave that paper here, if you choose. You can take it away, if you choose. If you leave it with me, I can do this for you. I can put the matter back on its old footing, and I can go as far as to give you a written undertaking that this man Bagnet will never be troubled in any way until you've been proceeded against to the utmost. This is, in fact, all but freeing him. Have you decided?
I must do it, sir.
Very well. I will draw up the undertaking straight away, and you may forget Smallweed's letter. I promise you that.
Why, George, how low you are. All's well, ain't it?
Yes. Yes.
I hope you don't think anything of a shrill old soldier's wife who could have bitten her tongue out afterwards.
My kind soul of a darling. Never.
Because really and truly all I meant was that I trusted you to bring Matt through it, and you have brought him through it.
Thank you, my dear. I couldn't see you hurt, or Matt, or young Woolwich, or the girls. Many years on, when you're an old lady, and a handsome old lady you'll be, there won't be a sorrowful line in your face if I can prevent it. And one thing's sure.
Yes?
There won't be one white hair. There won't be one sorrowful line that was marked there by an undutiful son.
Oh. George, old friend, what is it?
It's nothing, my dear, nothing. I think I'll go and smoke a pipe in the street for a minute. If you'll excuse me.
Charlie? Where are you, Charlie?
I'm here, miss. Here's my hand. There. Oh, miss, you've come to yourself. Shall I bathe your forehead for you?
Thank you.
There.
Oh, yes. That's so cool. So good. Charlie, in a moment, would you close the curtains a little? The light is so bright.
Yes, the light, miss.
Yes, Charlie. It dazzles so. I can... Charlie! I can see!
Day by day, the glorious light came more fully and brightly upon me,
and day by day my strength returned. One pleasant afternoon I was raised in bed with pillows to enjoy a tea drinking with Charlie. Now, at last, I felt strong enough to say to her something that had been in my thoughts ever since I began to get well again. Thank you, Charlie. The room looks so fresh, so pretty and airy, not like a sick room at all.
I'm glad you think so, miss.
Indeed I do. But surely there's something missing. Something that used to be there.
I don't see nothing missing. No. Everything's here, miss.
Are the pictures as they used to be?
Every one.
And furniture?
Yes. Except where I've moved it to give more room.
And yet, something familiar's gone. Ah, I know what it is.
Do you, miss?
Yes. The looking glass. I understand.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't cry. This is no shock to me, Charlie. I've thought about it very often. It matters very little. I hope I can do without my old face very well.
Oh, my dear, dear girl. Oh, oh, what a sad time this has been. Ada and I have been quite forlorn and miserable without our Dame Durden. Your friend Caddy's been here late and early, and even poor Rick has written to me in his anxiety for you.
Ada didn't mention that in her letters.
I thought it best not to tell her. The truth is, he wrote to me under protest because he couldn't write to you. Oh. He wrote resentfully. You see, Rick doesn't trust me now. He goes to lawyers and they tell him that he and I have conflicting interests.
Is it possible that he doubts you?
Oh, we mustn't blame him. Jarndyce and Jarndyce was the curtain of Rick's cradle, and I've seen many fine, fresh young hearts turned by it. But enough of this. When can Ada come to see you?
Guardian, as I've kept Ada out so long, I think I'd like to have my own way a little longer. Oh. Perhaps if Charlie and I went to some country lodging and I had a week there to get stronger, then I could face the happiness of seeing Ada again.
Of course. And here's Boythorn, heart of chivalry, breathing such ferocious vows as never were breathed on paper before, that if you don't go down and occupy his whole house, which he's turned out of for that express purpose, he'll pull it down by heaven and not leave one brick standing on another.
Does he really say so?
He really does. Shall we write to him and accept?
Oh, please. Of all the places I could have thought of, there's nowhere I'd rather go than Chesney Wold.
Good, good. Now, I have one other message. Little Miss Flight, hearing a rumour that you were ill, thought nothing of walking down here to inquire, 20 miles in her dancing shoes. Could you spare her one afternoon before you go to Boythorn's?
Oh, I'd be very happy to see her. Ah. Tell her to come down, Guardian, please. By the coach, perhaps. Oh. Not in her dancing shoes.
Of course, of course.
Yes, my dear, a dreadful thing. Though I fear Mr. Crook's intemperate habits may have been partly responsible. He was always a little, you know, oh, yes, definitely a little.
Well, then, where are you lodging now, if this Mr. Smallweed doesn't wish you to remain in your old room?
With a very good sort of woman, a Mrs. Blinder, in Bell Yard. But, my dear, let us forget poor Mr. Crook. It distresses me to think of it.
Oh, then.
Dear me, I have nothing in here but documents. No pocket handkerchief.
Here you are, Miss Blythe.
Oh, thank you, my child. By the way, speaking of pocket handkerchiefs, very right, my child. Very indiscreet of me to mention it. But I'm afraid I am at times a little rambling, you know.
What were you going to tell me?
If you please, ma'am,
You'd better tell, then. So sagacious, our young friend. Diminutive, but sagacious. Well, my dear, it's a pretty anecdote. When our young friend met me at the coach, who should follow us down the road but a poor woman in a very ungenteel bonnet?
Jenny, if you please, miss.
Just so. Jenny. And what does she tell our young friend? But that there has been a lady with a veil inquiring at the cottage after your health, my dear Fitz Jarndyce, and taking the handkerchief away with her as a little keepsake, because it once belonged to you.
If you please, miss, Jenny says that when the baby died, you left the handkerchief there, and she put it away and kept it because it had covered the baby.
I remember.
Well, miss, that's the handkerchief the lady took.
Is it not a pretty story? I think it was the Lord Chancellor's wife. He is married, you know. I have observed him a good many years. Oh, a great many years. There's a cruel attraction in the place. The court, I mean. I think it's the mace and seal that draws people on.
Draws them?
They draw people. Draw sense out of them. Peace out of them. Good looks out of them. Cold, glittering baubles. I've seen it beginning in our friend, the warden Jarndyce. Let him beware, or they'll draw him to ruin. But, my dear, you haven't yet congratulated me on my physician.
Your physician? Who is your physician?
Why, Mr. Woodcourt.
But he's so far away.
Oh, of course, you don't know what has happened. My dear, there has been a terrible shipwreck in those East India parts.
Mr. Woodcourt has been shipwrecked.
Don't be agitated, my dear. He is safe. It was very terrible. Hundreds of dead and dying. But through it all, my dear physician was a hero. Saved many lives, tended the sick, buried the dead, and brought the poor survivors safely off at last. My dear, the whole country rings with it. I have the papers in my reticule.
Oh.
Yes, yes, you shall read about it and learn what a good man my physician is.
And now I must confess my secret. I had thought, sometimes, that Mr. Woodcourt loved me, and that if he'd been richer, perhaps he would have told me so. I had thought, too, that if he'd done so, I would have been glad of it. But how much better it was that this had never happened. How I would have suffered if I had to write to him and tell him that the poor face he'd known as mine was quite gone from me. The following week we went to Mr. Boythorn's house. We arrived late at night and were welcomed by the smiling housekeeper I'd met before. After supper, I went up to my room, where I had a purpose and wished to be alone.
Oh, what a dear little room. Chintz, fresh flowers, pretty little chairs, pretty dressing table with a mirror. Covered the mirror. Come, Esther, don't be foolish. You have to learn to know your new face. Oh, tomorrow, shall I wait till the morning? No, now, Esther. Now, while you're brave. Never been a beauty, and had never thought myself one, but I'd been very different from this. It was all gone now, all gone. But I thought of the love that surrounded me, and told myself what a little thing this was,
I wept. I could not help myself. But they were not bitter tears.
Good morning, miss. Shall I bring you some tea? Why, miss!
Yes, Charlie. I'm brushing my hair. It's time I brush my own hair again.
Oh, miss!
It's all right. I'm very well and very happy. Truly I am, Charlie. But one thing troubled me. I had kept Mr. Woodcourt's flowers. When they were withered, I had dried them and put them in a book that I was fond of. Now I was doubtful whether I had the right to preserve what he had sent to one so different. At last I decided that I might keep them, if I treasured them only as a remembrance of what was irrevocably past and gone. I hope this may not seem trivial. I was very much in earnest. I often walked in the woods and parks of Chesney Wold, and daily I grew stronger. One afternoon, after a long ramble, I was resting on a seat that commanded a lovely view, while Charlie gathered violets at a little distance away.
Miss Summerson. Oh, forgive me. I'm afraid I startled you.
A little. I did not expect to see you, Lady Dedlock.
You can scarcely be strong yet. You've been very ill, I know.
I'm recovering now.
Is this your young attendant?
Yes.
Will you send her on ahead?
Charlie?
Yes, miss?
Take your flowers home. I'll follow you.
Yes, miss?
You still look so pale.
My handkerchief. You have my handkerchief?
Yes.
You were the lady?
Yes.
Yes.
Why? Do not kneel. Please. You must not kneel to me.
Oh, I must. Oh, my child, forgive me. Try to forgive me. I am your wicked and unhappy mother.
My mother?
Yes. Oh, I did not know, Esther. I did not know. They told me you had died at birth.
My mother? Oh, thank God.
No, no, do not thank God for me. It is too late to bless and receive me.
Oh, but now that you have found me...
I have a husband. I must keep this secret for his sake. Oh.
Mother, dearest mother.
Oh, God. When I heard you were ill, I was frantic. I despaired. I had only lately found that my child still lived. I came here now to speak to you, but once in all my life, we can never meet again.
Never? Have I found you only to lose you?
But we may never exchange another word on this earth. Take this letter, read it, and destroy it, and then consider me a dead woman.
Oh, can I? All my life?
If you can, believe that I love you. I love you with a mother's love, and so I suffer greatly. But if I preserve my secret till death, or if I'm discovered and disgraced, I must stay alone. No one can help me.
But is your secret safe?
No. It has been very near discovery. It was saved only by an accident. It may still be lost by another.
Do you fear a particular person?
I dread one person very much.
Me?
Not a friend. One too passionless to be either. He is... Sir Leicester Dedlock's lawyer.
Is he suspicious?
Yes. I may keep him at a standstill, but I can never shake him off.
Has he no pity?
None. And no anger. He is indifferent to everything but his calling.
Could you not trust in him?
I shall never try. I must tread my dark road alone, and it will lead me where it will. This is my punishment.
But Mr. Jarndyce...
Does he suspect...
No, but he's so good and sensible. Perhaps if he knew...
You may confide in him. You have my consent. A small gift from such a mother. But please, do not tell me of it. I have some pride, even yet.
I hope that he might help you.
No one can help me. For the last time, my dearest daughter, we shall meet no more. If you hear of the brilliant Lady Dedlock, the prosperous Lady Dedlock, think of your wretched mother. Think that the reality is her suffering, her useless remorse. She has killed the only love and warmth of which she is capable. Forgive her, if you can, and cry to heaven to forgive her, even though it never can.
For a little space she held me in her arms. Then she took my hands away and put them back upon my breast, and with a last kiss released them and went back into the wood. I was alone. Stunned as I was, as weak and helpless as ever I'd been in my sick room, I knew that I must hide my feelings from everyone, even from Charlie. I went home, pleaded fatigue, and went to bed early, that I might alone read my mother's letter.
I did not abandon you, my child. They told me you were dead. But I know now that my sister, your godmother, as she told you, took you away and reared you in secrecy, without love. I never saw her again, until an accident told me the truth. I thought you were dead.
What more the letter said need not be reported here. I burned it, and then I wept. For it seemed to me that it would have been better and happier for many people if I had indeed died. All night and all next day I despaired. When the light waned into a gloomy evening, I went out alone, and for the first time was attracted to the great house. I passed before the terraced gardens, on by long lines of dark windows, underneath a gateway that led to the south front where were the balustrades of the Ghost's Walk, and one lighted window that might be my mother's. The way was paved here, and my footsteps made an echoing sound upon the flags. Suddenly, it came into my mind that there was a dreadful truth in the legend of the Ghost's Walk, and that it was I who was to bring calamity on this noble family, and my echoing feet were haunting it even then. But when I regained the sanctuary of my room, I found a joyful letter from Ada, and another from my guardian, and they told me that I was indeed loved, and that God had never intended me to die. I prayed for myself and for my unhappy mother, and the darkness began to pass away. I fell asleep, and next morning the darkness had gone. Ada was to arrive at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I must confess I was nervously anxious about my altered looks. Might it not prove worse than she expected? Might she not look for her old Esther and not find her? But when my Ada came, she ran to me with the old dear look, all love, fondness, and affection. Nothing else in it. Nothing. Nothing. She held my scarred face to her lovely cheek and bathed it with her tears. She had been with me a week when Charlie brought me a strange message. I was needed at the Dedlock Arms, the pleasant local inn. The message was from the landlord, a respectable man whom I liked, so I put on my bonnet and hastened to go there. I was shown into the parlour, and there, standing with outstretched arms, was Richard.
My dear Esther!
Richard!
Oh, my best friend. Always the same dear girl. Oh, Esther, I'm so happy to find you well again.
Well, I'm so happy to see you, so very happy.
May I come back with you? I want to appear quietly with Dame Durden under my arm and give my lovely Ada a surprise. I suppose your loyalty to John Jarndyce will admit that.
Oh, of course you're welcome there. And you'd be welcome at Bleak House, too, if only...
No, no, shh. Let's not talk about him, not now.
Very well.
I'm on leave now. So I came back to look after my chancery interests. We're spinning along with that old suit at last, I promise you.
Richard.
But why do we delay here? Take me back to the house, please.
Ada!
Esther, dear, where have you been? I searched the house and the garden. Charlie said you'd gone down to the village, but you were away so long.
I have a surprise for you.
For me?
I've brought a gentleman to see you.
A gentleman? Who can...
Hey.
Richard! Oh, Richard!
My dearest girl.
No, no. We're cousins, Richard. No more.
Very well. My dearest cousin, then. My dearest, loveliest cousin.
Richard is staying at the Dedlock Arms. He's here on leave.
So, I have left my lawyer to look after my chancery interest for a while and come up to this beautiful place to see you both.
Lawyer? Do you mean Mr. Kenge?
No, I do not mean Mr. Kenge. He's well enough, but he's not the man for me. Too conventional. I'm 21 now and can choose my own lawyer. And I have chosen Vowles.
Who is Vowles?
A clever fellow and devoted to my interests. Skimpole introduced me to him.
Mr. Skimpole? Are you sure he's the best?
I find Skimpole a capital fellow. He does me more good than anybody. And Vowles is making matters hum, I can tell you.
Does Cousin John know about Vowles?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've concealed nothing. I wrote to him and told him. I mean no disrespect to Cousin John. He's an honourable man, I'm sure. But he himself has said that Jarndyce and Jarndyce twists everything and everybody. Why should it not have twisted him a little, too?
Because he has forsworn it.
Maybe that's very wise of Cousin John. That outward indifference may cause other parties to become lax about their own interests, which do, after all, conflict with his. Vowles pointed that out to me.
Richard, Cousin John is the best, the most disinterested of advisers.
Maybe he is. Maybe. I have not been underhand in this. I have told him that from now on, he goes his way and I will go mine.
Richard.
And in time to come, my dearest Cousin Ada, when you are no longer a ward of the court and we are free to renew our engagement, I promise you, I will be myself once more, and in very different worldly circumstances. Then, perhaps, I can renew my old friendship with Cousin John.
I left them together for a little while, for it was clear to me that Ada still loved him dearly. It was a very transparent business, this meeting as cousins only. The following day there came a message from Vowles to the effect that Jarndyce and Jarndyce would be in court again in the morning. Richard left for London at once. He was in high spirits. But Ada wept to see him go, and I felt a sad foreboding. In his face was a clouded, eager, seeking look that reminded me so dreadfully of someone else. So young, so handsome, in all respects the opposite of little Miss Flight. And yet... in that look, so sadly like her. Soon, too soon, our time at Chesney Wold came to an end, and we went back to Bleak House. But I had a visit that I knew I must make, which necessitated a journey to London. Something in my mother's letter had made me decide that, however difficult the interview might be, I must speak to Mr. Guppy.
Miss Summerson. This is indeed an oasis.
I took the liberty of sending you a note, sir.
Well, I have it here, next to my heart. Well, will you not put up your veil, miss? Your image, as you know, is imprinted on my heart, and I wish to behold it again.
Very well. Did I not tell you that I had been ill?
Yeah? Well, yeah, but I didn't, I mean...
I asked the favour of a meeting here, in preference to calling at Mr. Kenge's office... since I felt that that might cause you some embarrassment.
Well, Miss Summerson, I beg your pardon, but in our profession we find it necessary to be explicit. You are referring to an occasion when I did myself the honour of making a declaration, which...
Yes, Mr.
Well, I a kind of giddy sensation has come over me, miss. I'm a little subject to that... that sort of thing. My intention was to remark that you were so good on that occasion as to repudiate that declaration. You wouldn't perhaps object to admit that.
There is no doubt that I declined your proposal without any reservations, Mr. Guppy.
Thank you, miss. And so far that's satisfactory and does you credit. something bronchial, I think. You wouldn't perhaps be offended if I was to mention that such a declaration on my part was final, there terminated.
I admit it, fully and freely.
Thank you. I mean, I regret that circumstances over which I have no control will put it out of my power ever to renew that offer, but it will, in retrospect, be entwined with friendship's bowers.
Perhaps I may now mention what I wanted to say to you.
Well, I should be honoured, I'm sure.
You implied on that occasion...
Excuse me, miss. I can't admit that I implied anything.
You said you might advance my fortunes by certain discoveries you might make.
Mm.
I've come to ask you to relinquish all idea of serving me. You could make no discovery that would do me the least service or give me the least pleasure. I am acquainted with my personal history, you see. If you have not already abandoned the project, will you lay it aside, please, for my peace?
Well, upon my honour, Miss Summerson, I act according to your wishes. I take my oath on it. You may depend on me.
Thank you. I do.
I'm only sorry that my arrangements in life, coupled with circumstances over which I have no control, should prevent a renewal of what was wholly terminated some time back. But it couldn't be. Now, could it? You know, I'll put it to you.
It certainly could not. There is no doubt at all.
Oh, it's very handsome of you, miss. You may rely on me in every respect, save the tender passion only. That's right, old gentleman. Take your time. Have you been back here since it happened, Tony?
No. Have you looked in at all?
No. Well, to be honest with you, I don't greatly relish the house except in your company.
Mm.
Therefore, I promised this little appointment to take away your things. Do you think it's possible, from your knowledge of that capricious and deep old character who fell a prey to the spontaneous element, do you think that he could have put those letters away anywhere so that they're not destroyed?
No, William. Yeah. I think they've gone all right. I'll give him another knock.
Yeah. Tony, without entering into further explanation, Tony, I may tell you that the idol whose image was imprinted upon my heart is now shattered.
Hmm?
But I owe it to myself and to the shattered image to destroy those letters. If you gave them to me now, I'd pitch them into the fire.
Oh, it's you, is it? Come in.
Ah, thank you, Miss Smallweed.
Who is it?
The young man has lived upstairs.
Oh, bring him in. Bring him in. Ah, how do you do, gentlemen? Come to fetch your property, Mr. Weevil?
Yes.
That's good, that's good. We'd have been forced to sell you up, sir, to pay your warehouse room if you'd left it much longer. Glad to see you, glad to see you.
Thank you.
What, Mr. Tulkinghorn? Is that you?
Good day, Mr. Guppy.
Good day, sir. Great deal of property here, I dare say.
Oh, rags and rubbish, my dear friend. We're endeavouring to make out an inventory, but we haven't come on much worth selling it yet.
Well, sir, we won't intrude any longer, if you'll allow me to go upstairs.
Anywhere, my dear sir, anywhere. You're at home.
Thank you. Well, let's be quick about it. The sooner we're out of this, the better. Ah, there's that horrible cat coming.
Stop! Get out! Did you ever see such a brute? Looks as if she knew all about it. Almost looks as if she were a crook.
Get out, you goblin!
Mr. Guppy.
Mr. Tulkinghorn? Is it you?
Yes. Could I have a word with you?
Oh, I wish to act with courtesy to all a member of the profession, particularly one so distinguished as yourself, sir. But I must stipulate that anything you have to say to me must be said in the presence of my friend.
Indeed?
Yes, sir. My reasons are not of a personal nature, but they are important to myself.
No doubt. The matter is not of that consequence that I need put you to the trouble of making conditions. You ought to be congratulated, Mr. Guppy. You're a fortunate young man.
I don't complain.
High friends. Free admission to great houses. Access to elegant ladies. Many people in London would give their ears to be you.
Sir, if I attend to my work for Kenyon Carboy, my friends and acquaintances are of no consequence to any member of the profession, not excepting Mr. Tulkinghorn of the Fields. I'm not under any obligation to explain myself further, and, without offence, I hope, I don't intend to do it.
Quite so. Who is this picture? Lady Dedlock?
Ah, yes. It was in a magazine.
The portrait is a really good likeness, in its way. But it wants force of character. Good day, dear girl.
I've no idea what that eminent old party is up to, but believe me, he's up the summit. Let's get out.
What?
Get your things together and let's get out of this place. I never want to see it again.
In part 5 of Charles Dickens's Bleak House, dramatized in 8 episodes by Betty Davis, the part of Esther Summerson was played by Brenda Blethyn, Mr. Jarndyce by Michael Bryant, and Lady Dedlock by Sarah Kestelman. Mr. Tulkinghorn, Robert Lang, Mr. Guppy, William Nye, Mr. Weevil, Steve Hodson, Grandfather Smallweed, Patrick Troughton, Trooper George, Michael Graham Cox, Charlie, Angela Pleasance, Ada, Maggie Wilkinson, Richard, Andrew Sear, Miss Flight, Sylvia Coleridge, Mr. Bagnet, Stephen Thorne, Mrs. Bagnet, Pauline Letts, Mrs. Rouncewell, Margot Boyd, with Rosalind Adams, Nicholas Courtney, and Stephen Garlick, and Simon Cadell as Charles Dickens. The director was Jane Morgan.